And we are now live.
Okay. Well, I'll start off the ATU LTD Pension Trust. It's 11 a.m. on August 16th. We're going to start off with a roll call of trustees. So I'll start off just through the list. Mr. John Gangle.
Here.
Mr. Frederick Casey.
Here.
Ms. Michelle Weber. Absent. Mrs. Christina Hsu.
Here.
Mr. Mark Johnson.
Here.
I have a quick correction. Michelle Weber has actually just been switched with Gino Grimaldi for the board member representation, and he was unavailable to attend today.
Okay, we'll make sure we get that corrected for the next time. All right, we got preliminary remarks from the chair. I don't have any preliminary remarks today. I'm sure we'll have a good discussion. Looking forward to hearing some of the news from our professionals. And I'll just move on to audience participation. So I'll give this chance for anybody in the audience to raise their hand if they want to speak. And if they do, we can go over the audience participation rules.
We have one audience member, but they are not anything they would like to
see. Okay. So with that, we can move on to our next item, which will be approval of the meeting minutes. The meeting minutes are part of your packet. I was able to read through them. I didn't note any corrections, but I'll open it up, see if anybody else had any questions about it. Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion to approve them. Moved by Mark Johnson. Can I get a second? Seconded by John Gangle. It's open for discussion if anybody had any discussion points. All right, hearing none, we'll just approve them with a simple aye.
Aye. In
favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those not in favor? That passes unanimously. All right. So we got items for board recommendation, updated ATU pension plan funding policy, and then this has Christina Hsu up for that presentation. So we'll hand it over to you, Christina.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, everybody. I sent out the updated policy, a red line version of the changes that we were proposing to this group. And the purpose of the pension policy plan funding policy is to provide a framework that has things like the roles and responsibilities, the authority of the different trustees, the board members, and the advisors. And it also is to show how the benefit commitments will be achieved, including things like what the decision-making process is for financing the pension fund benefit obligations. And we last updated this policy back in July of 2020. And at that time, it was just some small administrative updates. And this time, the proposed update to the existing policy is part of a commitment that we made to the board back in October. And we did that because we have a new strategic business plan, and it was one of our strategic business plan financial health tactics, which is to develop and update a number of financial policies. And this is one of those finance health policies. And so the goal of the pension policy update is not really to make any changes to current practice, because the current practice is working just fine, but it's to provide clarity by formalizing the existing framework. And so as you could see, the key changes that I made to the document in the red line document was to update the purpose to align with our strategic business plan. And then I had a lot of clarification with regards to the roles and responsibilities for the director of finance, the trustees, and the board, as well as the advisors. And then the next step in the process is I'm here to ask for you guys to provide your approval or recommendation to approve to the board. It's a board policy. And so the pension committee is a advisory committee to the board. So that approval goes to the board, and we would provide a recommendation to either adopt the policy as presented or with amendments from what I proposed. So that's sort of the high level summary of why this is in front of you, what changes I made, and what I'm looking for from you at today's meeting.
Thank you, Christina, for that. I do know that we had some late coming commentary from our actuary,
mm-hmm.
clarifying some of the amortization periods,
mm-hmm.
and kind of defining that 20 years is the practice, although trustees could recommend a different amortization period. Scott, I don't know if you wanted to highlight that change that you had proposed this morning, I think is when it came in.
Yeah. So, Bill and Christina, I sent an email back to the group from Christina's email this morning,
uh-huh.
Just marking a couple additional points that had been called out in some of the earlier discussion as the way it had originally been structured. The details of the amortization policy are really delegated to the trustees. And so that's detailed at one point in the document. But then uh-huh. in two sections later on, there were references that had further kind of tied the specifics of the amortization period to the working and wage agreement.
Okay.
And in some prior emails, I think it was agreed that probably wasn't necessary, that it really is the trustees and the conflict within the document wasn't desirable. So
okay.
It looked like that hadn't made it into the final version. What I shared this morning had at least one possible approach to tweak that to solve that conflict. It could be done a different way. But I do think that's probably best to get that that consistent throughout the document.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I did not see your email,
okay.
But I'm looking for it right now. And
it was 9:37, I think, this morning.
And I think the amortization schedule point you made in the working wage agreement has never been in the working wage agreement.
Yeah, we thought that would just be cumbersome,
yeah.
as
yeah.
part of bargaining, and we don't really want to include that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fine. So Scott, the document you updated, does it include the changes that were made by Jeff?
Yeah. So I took the kind of the clean version that you sent this morning and then suggested edits to two paragraphs from there.
Okay, excellent. I'm sorry that I missed your email. And if I'm looking for, or if someone could bring that up, that would be great. Or I guess everybody, it sounds like everybody's seen it except for me. And so if everybody is fine with the changes that Scott's proposing, we can actually go with that particular document. So as amended is what we would be proposing to approve for me to take to the board.
Okay, I did, I forwarded it to Camille. So if anybody did want it to be brought up, the as amended version, we could bring that up onto the screen. If folks were able to review it via email, then we can just approve that as amended by Scott. So I will entertain a motion for that approved as amended. Anybody want to move it?
Yeah, I'll move it. As amended.
Okay, moved by Mark Johnson. Anybody want to second that?
I will second it.
Seconded by Christina Hsu. Moving into discussion, I just had one discussion point on the last paragraph. I do know we had some back and forth, paragraph 8 on that. And just a reminder, it does allow the trustees to recommend a contribution that is below the ADC. Although we would still have to act within our fiduciary capacity when recommending that. So that would still be a decision that has to be based as a fiduciary. So we have to put the plan and the plan participants first when we're recommending below the ADC. Just wanted to get that clarified for people to know that when the trustees do that, that is a fiduciary responsibility that we have. Anybody else have any comments on the funding policy? Okay, seeing none, I will call for a vote. So all those in favor, say aye.
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 Fred, did I get you?
Aye.
All those not in favor? Hearing none, the funding plan as amended by Scott passes unanimously. So thank you everybody for doing that. Thank you, Christina, for pushing that one forward. I know you had to bump us a couple times, but I do think we got good engagement and we ended in a good place.
Absolutely. Thank you for being so engaged, everyone. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll move to the report of the investment consultant next. So we'll bring up Ian. Ian, take the floor.
All right. Camille, would you like me to use the page numbers that are on my document or the master page numbers, just to reference pages? So I'll go off the master one. So I think it's 10 of 74 is where the, I think it's probably the next slide, but one more. Oh, okay. You're on mine. So yeah, I'll reference my page numbers at page 4, please. All right. So Q2, we'll talk capital markets review first and go through fund performance. That's the only items I've got on my agenda as of today. So please feel free to jump in with questions. If we start out with a market, kind of capital markets overview from Q2, it was unfortunately kind of a lot of the same themes and trends that we saw in Q1 that materialized, unfortunately, almost to a more negative degree in Q2. You know, the same things that we've been talking about at the last meeting, continued inflation concerns, decreasing growth prospects, and really a Federal Reserve that was now admittedly way behind the curve and trying to do a little catch up. So, you know, in Q2, we saw May get a 50 basis point increase to the federal funds rate. We saw that followed up by a 75 basis point increase in June, and not included in these numbers as we're only as of June 30th here, but in July, we saw that followed up by another 75 basis point. So really, monetary tightening that we have not really seen since the 70s, since last time we saw inflation levels this high. I mean, right now we're at 40-year highs. And a lot of that is to do with trying to contain the inflation numbers that we're seeing that are now unfortunately spreading to a lot of places in the economy that the Federal Reserve is very nervous about and trying to kind of contain more aggressively. And those are the more sticky components of inflation, like housing, for example, not just food and energy prices, which were driving inflation numbers for the most part over the past year, are now subsiding somewhat. I mean, you've probably all seen fuel prices have come down a little bit. Commodity prices have evened out somewhat post kind of supply chains opening back up over the past 6 months or so. But now we're starting to see other components of underlying inflation data start to really kind of drive inflation higher. So even though we got a lower print this last month than we did at the 9.1 or something that we hit as a high as of June 30th, in July we hit like an 8.5, you know, month over month, we're still about 1 and 1.5% growing or so on the inflation side of things. So obviously markets really don't like it, this kind of territory. And when I say markets, unfortunately, when inflation is running this hot, and again, haven't seen this in 40 years or so, but unfortunately, both bonds and equities tend to suffer in this kind of an environment. I mean, if you look at holistically over the past 100 plus years or so of markets, we really only have a sample period of about, you know, maybe 10% of observations over that entire time period when we've had a similar environment like this, where inflation's been running this hot, and traditional asset classes, stocks and bonds, tend to unfortunately suffer simultaneously. Equity markets don't like it because discount rates are being increased, so future earnings for future cash flows for companies get discounted at a higher rate, making them look less attractive right now. And fixed income doesn't like it because obviously when rates increase, that decreases the price of a bond currently. So it's kind of getting most traditional asset classes, hence most investor portfolios are kind of getting the double edge of the sword right now. Now there's a few places, very select few places of the market that have done all right this year. Commodities had a really strong first quarter, but backed up a little bit in Q2. You've had a few other asset classes that would really kind of fall into that real return or real assets category that have done okay.
But generally speaking, essentially, there's been no place to hide in the market today. And we continue to kind of see that through Q2. Now, the bright news is post Q2, we've had some data points come in that the markets have found a little bit more favorable. One being inflation kind of turning over a little bit. Like I mentioned, it went from 9.1 at the end of Q2, kind of dropping back down to 8.5 at the end of July, year over year. So that was a generally favorable trend that, the markets digested to somewhat or some degree. You know, the other part of the, the other component that the markets generally found a little bit favorable is that we're getting unemployment data still coming in at pretty low readings, or historically low readings, at like 3.5%. So on the one hand, markets are saying, okay, well, what the Fed's aggressive policy is probably doing enough where they can probably take a step back and maybe not go so aggressively going forward. Markets generally tend to like that. And obviously, from a technical perspective, you could argue that we're in a recession. Two quarters of negative GDP growth is a loose understanding of what represents a recession, even though in the US, we actually have a National Bureau of Economics that is actually the one that dictates if we're in a recession or not. They look at a lot more indicators like manufacturing indices, producer indices, and definitely unemployment rates. And for those kind of metrics, don't scream recession yet. So the Fed's chosen path of saying they're going to increase federal funds rate to try to contain inflation, and they think they can get us to some quote unquote soft landing. Essentially, that's Fed speak for saying not driving us into a recession. Jury's still out if that's gonna happen or not. I think most people think that it's unlikely. History tells us that it's unlikely, but the fact that unemployment rate hasn't started spiking, wage growth is still, you know, clipping along pretty well, and we're creating so many more jobs. Another 500,000 or so jobs were created last month. Those are all strong economic indicators. So markets generally found that positive in July. So the good, somewhat good news is July 1st through really yesterday has been pretty positive in the market. So the numbers we're going to see today are almost kind of right at the chopping period of like the worst that we've seen this year. I can give you a few updated estimates of where things sit as of today, but just to kind of put that in perspective, you know, the S&P 500 was down about 20% through June. It's now down about only 9. So we've had about plus 13% in the S&P 500 July 1st through today. That's pretty encouraging. International markets haven't been quite as good, but they basically went from a negative 20 down to like a negative 14. So they've had some positive performance over the past month and a half. Bonds gained a little bit more back. So they were up about 2% or so over the last couple months. So they're only down to minus 9 off of their minus 10 or so. So we've seen some kind of retreat or backing up a little bit of markets. But to generally put it, the numbers we're going to look at today are certainly not great. I would say that you're not anywhere alone in this. Almost every client that we're discussing this with or have looked at Q2 numbers, unless you had a really heavy allocation to things that really haven't been marked yet, like private equity or private real estate, if you have a fairly liquid portfolio, you're generally down somewhere in the realm of where you all are today. And those bigger pension clients that have allocations to things like private equity and real estate. Real estate, you could argue maybe the marks haven't come down as much, but some of the early indications on private equity are not too great either. As you might imagine, that's pretty heavily represented in tech names that don't have very good earnings prospects as of like right now, are getting discounted at higher rates. And then certainly some of those marks are coming in similar to what we've seen like the NASDAQ do this year, which is down about 30% or so as of June 30th. So that might be kind of the overall kind of backdrop to some of the numbers we're going to see today, but happy to answer any questions on specific issues as it relates to capital markets, either markets in general
on the economic side of things or policy side of things. Happy to field any questions before I move on.
Not seeing any questions. Anybody from the virtual panel? Not seeing anything there either, so we'll just let you continue.
Okay, I'll move one page ahead, Camille, if you don't mind, just because I think this is a pretty interesting chart that puts things into a really good perspective. A lot going on this page, but generally all it's saying is it's plotting the S&P every single quarterly dot represents a different quarter return since 1976. The S&P 500 on the vertical axis and the Bloomberg US Ag Bond Index on the horizontal axis. So you could think of this as, you know, your generic US equity return or your generic bond return since 1976, since plotting those. It also kind of breaks it in by inflation category on the color of the dot. But I think what's most unique about this year is that bottom left-hand quadrant rarely ever occurs. And it's occurred in two back-to-back quarters. So you can see Q1 2022, and you can see Q2 2022 with the arrow pointing to it. And that just shows that we've had two back-to-back quarters where both bonds and equities sold off at the same time. It rarely occurs, and it has only occurred in what we've identified here as kind of a high inflationary environment. And that's when CPI is running 5 or hotter. Obviously, we're running much hotter than that. But to also put things into perspective on how difficult this year has been so far, you know, we've had a lot of years where equity markets have been, you know, over the past 100 years or so that have been down double digits. That's not terribly surprising. Equity markets tend to do that. They tend to mean revert over time. We've had a 10-year plus bull run in the equity markets. You know, this is something that's probably not terribly surprising. What's surprising about it is the US Ag Bond Index being down 10% year to date so far. That is the worst two-month or worst start to the year for the US Ag Bond Index on history, and by a pretty wide margin. So again, it just kind of puts it into perspective that there wasn't really anywhere to hide in terms of market performance in the first two quarters. I think this chart does a pretty good job outlining that. So with that, Camille, if you wouldn't mind moving to page 14. So here's where the portfolio sat at the end of Q2. On the bottom, you can see there, you know, about a $6 million or so loss this year over the first 6 months. That translated into about a negative 15.5% return. I can give you a little bit of reprieve in saying that as of yesterday, you know, these are just estimates right now, but generally the portfolio has been up about 6.5% since this. And is now only about down 10% as of yesterday, as opposed to 15, and it's gained about $3 million back. So, you know, you're right now, the numbers we're going to see as of today are an ending market value at about 34 in change, or sub 35 million. It's back kind of in the 37.5 range based on our estimates as of yesterday's close. So again, still not a great year so far, but thankfully July and August up to this point have been much better for markets, and these numbers going forward, or hopefully the end of the year, don't look necessarily as bad as these Q2 numbers that we're going to look at today. You can see there that, you know, due to market drift, those red allocation bars, you know, we're a little bit off our target allocation. Again, kind of market movements post these numbers have brought some of those in closer to their targets as equities have kind of gained back some steam and overtaken bond returns in the past month and a half. So the variances there that you see there in red versus the target allocations, not quite as dramatic as of today as they were at the end of Q2, still well within policy ranges that are outlined in the top right box there. So those are the policy ranges, the allocation ranges that reference to the investment policy statement. So well within those stated guidelines. So as of right now, at least from our perspective, not a need for the fund to rebalance per se. Any questions on this page before I jump into performance? Okay, hearing none. So on the next page, you know, again, I think this is just a good reminder that we try to make sure we look at when we're digesting in a second what we're going to look at versus peer rankings. So, you know, you can cut peer groups any way you want to. Depending on the way you cut the data, it tells you different themes based on asset sizes or based on what kind of plans you include. As a reminder to this committee, and you've probably heard me say this ad nauseum over the years, you know, this all pension plans under 100 million, it includes a great number of pension plans that kind of have LDI type strategies or liability driven investing strategies that have, they're basically amortized their bond portfolio to look like their liability portfolio. And so they have a lot of fixed income. So you can see there in that third bar over in that US fixed income where it shows you all having in the bottom quartile of allocations to fixed income. I would say if you had a perfect transparency into the data, which is always tough to get with peer group data, but you were able to say, well, let's look at other plans that are similarly funded to us, that bar would be much closer to a median allocation for fixed income. Because some of these are essentially fully funded and don't necessarily need to take on a bunch of equity risk. And so they have a lot more fixed income. So when we have drawdown years such as this, we tend to underperform the peer median. When we've got years where equity markets are doing really well, like we've seen over the past 10 years or so, this plan tends to rank much better than the peer median. So kind of just to put that into perspective, you know, as we look at these peer rankings on the following page, or actually, excuse me, Camille, a couple pages forward, page 18, if you will. So again, so for the quarter, down 11, but outperforming the target allocation index by about 60 basis points, a little shy of 60 basis points. Year to date, essentially matching the target allocation index, that the primary benchmark for the system. Ranking, you know, kind of middle of the, or excuse me, two-thirds of the way into the pack, about 71st and 66th respectively on the quarter and the calendar year to date. Obviously that one is the best there, 100 being the worst. So you can see the peer median returns there listed below the difference line on the target allocation index. So a couple lines down, that two white bars down, you see the all pension plans, less than 100 million median. You know, really, you can tell actually there's not that much of a deviation between your return and the median return, percent and a half, if you will. I would actually, you know, probably beg to say that if we could look at rankings as of yesterday, that you've probably kind of right back at the median allocation, given that equities have done so much better over the past month and a half. And you can still see, even with a pretty difficult year-to-date return, if you look out at those, you know, 3, 5, 7, 10-year rankings, still really good rankings relative to the peer group. Again, that's kind of back to that comment I made where the peer group's not a perfect apples-to-apples comparison, but certainly you've done better than the majority of pension plans under 100 million, and that's reflected in those longer-term rankings. We still can sit over that 3, 5, 7, and 10-year period. You still have positive performance versus the benchmark as well. So again, just trying to remember to put a couple quarters into perspective. You know, what we're really focused here is the longer term returns, the longer term rankings, definitely the longer term top line return numbers, trying to meet or exceed your investment return assumption. You know, for the most part, over most of those trailing periods, that still holds true. And so I just want to make sure we're putting that negative 15 year-to-date number into perspective when we're thinking about the long-term funding of the plan.
when you look at the underlying asset class performance, you know, there wasn't any massive deviations in terms of the underlying composites. So that's like that total equity, domestic equity, international equity on the following page, fixed income, real return, and GTAA versus our respective benchmarks. You know, you've had a couple outperformance from some managers, some underperformance from others, but overall the collective group of the investment managers has stayed pretty close to the benchmark this year. Outperforming in some instances, slightly underperforming in others, but overall, the collective group of them has outperformed the benchmark quarter to date. And a lot of that was driven collectively by the international equity managers and the real return allocation. And if you recall, I don't think we ever fully know when these things are going to be smart decisions or not. You hope that they play out over the long period. But if you recall, you know, it was a couple of years ago back where we took that real return allocation and we bumped it up a little bit to say, hey, to reflect potentially making sure we have more inflation protection in the portfolio. And that's really kind of our safe haven right there, the real return portfolio. And that has really paid off in terms of these rankings. I think if we wouldn't have bumped that allocation up a bit a couple years ago, we probably would have been a little worse off so far. So the real return portfolio down about only 3% year to date, as opposed to some of those other segments being down much closer to 20%. So kind of the still a negative number, but a much less negative number there compared to tradable equities and fixed income. I am more than happy to go through individual manager performance on page 21 or 22 if you would like me to, but I am happy to take questions here if there are any, or cover any other aspects of the performance rankings, relative rankings, anything like that. Again, I think it's always tough to digest numbers like this when they revert so quickly, just a month and a half post print of these. So hopefully if Q3 kind of stays steady like it has been, hopefully we've got some more positive news to discuss at our next meeting. But again, maybe I'll open it up for questions, or if there are any specifics on managers, I'm happy to address that as well.
I'll open it up for questions. Maybe we can take that off the screen and I can see if anybody from our virtual panel has any questions.
No questions here. Thank you.
Not seeing any questions there. Okay. Ian, I guess we'll probably just take that. I mean, I knew it was going to be a brutal report. I do appreciate you putting on the brave face and, you know, coming here and delivering the news. Hopefully we can get it, you know, past this bump in the road here.
Yep.
It was a pretty severe correction.
Yeah. I would say the only thing that's a, you know, it's a tough pill to swallow when markets are like this, but I will say this is why you have a long-term focus, long-term policy in place. So you don't make knee-jerk reactions to when things like this happen. They do happen periodically. We've been pretty blessed, for a lack of a better word, over the past 10 years since the GFC, where things have been pretty rosy. And I would say that a lot of us in the industry felt like something like this was close to being inevitable. Nobody can ever predict when these things come and or what, how they'll materialize. Obviously, pandemic, we saw a pretty tough Q1 2020 that reverted back to being extremely positive, way faster than any of us would have anticipated. And I don't think there was a lot of people who really thought that inflation could ever run this extremely hot, given what central banks have done to try to contain inflation over the past 30 years. But here we are. So we really are in kind of unprecedented territory when it comes to market performance this year so far. Thankfully, it looks like to at least some of us that we've turned the corner a little bit over the past month and a half, but I would say we're far from out of the woods yet. If the Federal Reserve starts getting really aggressive with monetary policy and markets start getting skittish again, and we start getting economic indicators that are indicating that we're much closer to recession or in recession already,
you know, it's not out of the norm that things couldn't get ugly again. So it's kind of a wait and see mode right now. Pay close attention to what the Fed looks at over the next couple of months. That's going to dictate a lot of what markets do over the next coming year or two. But so far, the turnaround in the last month and a half has been positive.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll relieve you and
see.
Yeah. Well, hopefully for a positive report next time around, I'm sure you can make that happen.
I'll do my best.
All right. We'll move on to the report of the actuary. So we'll leave that up for Scott.
All right. Give me a moment here and I'm going to try to share the appropriate screen. Can you tell me if you can see the cover of the presentation okay?
It's looking good.
All right, great. So this will be pretty brief today, but just wanted to give trustees an update. As you'll recall, our evaluation work is really done on a biannual cycle. And from the last two meetings, we spent a lot of time on the ATU plan valuation as of January 1, 2022, and talked about assumptions and then talked about the results and the contributions that came out of that. So that has all been done and published, and the contribution rates in effect for the current fiscal year that started July 1 and the following one are based on that report and are all published. And then another work product we do each year around this time is accounting called GASB disclosures. And so we've finished that up just in the last week or so as well. So we're going to be in a little bit of a quiet period for the usual two-year cycle over the next couple meetings. So we won't have quite as much of meaty topics to cover with trustees. But did want to just spend a moment as a reminder for sort of last few years of funded status. As trustees may recall, we have a lot of different ways to measure funded status, and we have smooth values and we have market values. And so we can look at this different ways, but this is just a snapshot of really a January 1 market value of assets funded status basis for the last, 4 years, including the most recent valuation date. And the things I'd want to call out here is that, from January 1, 2019, all the way up to the start of this year, funded status improved quite nicely, even while, so from 65% to 84%, even while the trustees were repegging the discount rate assumption, the future rate of return assumption, to a more conservative basis, from 6.5% down to 5.5% over the course of this time frame. Now, obviously, that's only through January 1. Ian talked about the returns through the first 6 months of the year, and we put together an estimate just based on what he had for the approximately negative 15 to 16% asset return for this plan through the first 6 months. If we were guessing where at July 1, 2022, a market value funded status for the ATU plan on this same 5.5% discount rate basis was, it'd be about 70%. And again, as Ian mentioned, our markets have rallied a little bit since then. So, should be a little more positive than that, but that's kind of to keep in mind as where we're at the moment. This is a two-year cycle for setting the contribution rate. So really what will determine the next set of rates that go into effect are how the market recovers between now and January 1, 2024. So that's the time frame over which this works. The one other thing I did want to point out, and Ian may have comments that he wants to add on this as well, but one thing we've seen from some capital market outlooks, as certainly the last few years, one of the reasons the discount rate has been coming down is because we come in every year and say, markets have continued to grow and PE ratios are high and interest rates are low, and that makes forward-looking returns less rosy, lower forward-looking returns. We've started to see from some investment consultants in some houses that sort of update their capital market outlooks more frequently. The one sort of positive silver lining, if you kind of take, the pain that we had in the market for the first 6 months, you've taken losses, but then PE ratios in the equity markets are a little lower and interest rates are at a higher starting point. And it might mean that the forward-looking returns, there's not as much downward pressure, or it might even, come up some versus what we've seen in recent years. So that'll be something to monitor. by the time we come around to the next valuation, both kind of what the trailing returns have been and what that means for the forward-looking returns. But I'll pause there for any questions or if Ian wanted to weigh in on that last point at all. But that's really all I have for trustees today.
I would just say, I agree, Scott, that, you know, to your point, PE ratios coming in, certainly off the highs that we've seen over the past 10 years, is a positive for forward-looking equity markets, return prospects. Again, remember, we're talking like 10, 20-year prospects. We're not talking like the next year, for example. And an even greater prospect is what you can potentially now earn in a bond portfolio going forward with yields markedly higher than what they were even just a year ago. So that is a pretty positive thing for portfolios going forward. You know, that being said, some of the short-term risks still kind of come into play a lot more than those long-term prospects in the short run. The long run, yeah, I would certainly agree. The capital market assumptions, if we were to chop them again right now versus 6 months ago, they would look better than the capital market assumptions that we printed 6 months ago. All
right. Anybody have any more questions or commentary for Scott? Seeing none, we'll move on. Thank you, Scott, for that and for your work on the funding policy. Did appreciate that. I guess I'll swing it over to Jeff, our attorney, and see if he had any thoughts or.
Still nothing for this meeting. Maybe just a heads up for next meeting. It is possible I'll come to you with an amendment to adopt to implement some law changes from prior law that has to get embedded into the plan. The plan's already been operating under these new laws, and it may be timely to adopt an amendment for that. It won't be very complicated, I don't think. And so it's just a heads up for next meeting.
Thank you, Scott. Anybody have questions for Scott? Jeff, my bad. Jeff, anybody have any questions for Jeff? Looking at the wrong thing here. Okay, so nothing for Jeff. We'll move on to the administrator's report, and we have Sarah here.
I emailed out expenses and retirees since the last meeting, shortly after the meeting started, and then cash flows shortly after that. The expenses, I do want to point out that I have included deposits and journal entries in this expense because there are some overpayments of taxes and refunds that we've been getting, and we've earned some interest off that, and that was due to people passing away after they had, or me being notified of their passing after they had already been paid. Once I do the payroll, I immediately pay the taxes. So there's no worry about timing or anything like that. So there's just some adjustments with the liabilities on that. Nothing really out of the ordinary. I do wanna note, and I think I noted it in the last meeting, that there was an overpayment to a trustee or to a retiree whose check happened to fall into another retiree's application. That's usually where we get the routing and account number. We were notified the person had not received their payment. We found out the payment had gone to another pensioner. The pensioners are aware. The one pensioner was made whole. The second pensioner is paying back. So.
Well, hopefully we have better internal processes so that doesn't happen again.
We do. Yes, absolutely. And it was spoken with to the HR here because that's where it came from.
Yep. Understood.
So other than that, there was a transition in the bill.com administrator. And so you will notice that there is a liability to the salary plan. The salary plan or a liability from the salary plan. The salary plan owes the ATU plan because the ATU plan ended up paying salary plan expenses due to an internal miscommunication about how we are set up in bill.com, which is not typical than most of our clients in bill.com. So we have the two bank accounts under one name. And so when the new payer took over, they weren't paying attention to the account number I was telling them to pay from. So we will this month send an invoice to bill.com to repay that through bill.com.
Okay, I think we tracked that at the time.
Yes, we did.
And made a note of it and look forward to getting that corrected. Again, just some administration hiccups, and
yeah.
I think we're getting past those.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw you had a cash flow analysis.
Yes, we do have the cash flow analysis, and at last meeting, we had recommended the transfer. We all wanted to wait until the investments got a little favorable. So at this time, we are recommending a cash transfer of $700,000 into investments.
So it looks like right now you have a projected bank balance around 1.3 or 1.4.
I think we're at 1.4 as of the 7/3 or 7/31 bank statement.
Okay, so that would bring us back down. And that's still enough to cover our monthly expenses and
absolutely.
With a little positive in there.
Yeah, we are cash flow positive. And so I think transferring the $700,000 will pull us below the 3 months that we like to have, but the positive cash flow will catch us up pretty quickly.
Okay. And based on that, I mean, usually we kind of stagger that transfer, so it's not buying into the market on one particular day. But I would defer to Ian on any strategy there, and maybe you can turn your mic on.
Yeah, no, if there's a desire to move the $700,000 to investments, we could certainly stage that in. We've got enough of a variance. You know, it's not as big as the variance you saw on the report here in terms of the difference versus target. So I think we've got enough there where 700 would probably bring us back pretty close to target. We could do that over two waves, kind of like a week staggered or 2 week staggered, if you will. So it's if that's the direction of the trustees, I'm happy to work with Sarah and Dean on that. We could either transfer the whole 700 into the investment portfolio. That's probably the easiest way to do it, into the cash account that's in, or the money market account that's in the investment portfolio, and stage it into $350,000 buys staged over a 2 week period or so, just to make sure that we're spreading that across, not timing it all at once.
I mean, that makes sense to me. So let me craft a motion based around what you just said. That the trustees will approve a transfer of $700,000 into the investment cash account, which you will then put into the investments in two payments of $350,000.
Yeah, I would amend that to say I will recommend to you and Christina, who are the only ones who can actually sign to the custodian, the actual buy orders, but I will provide to you two recommended allocations to allocate the $350,000 or $700,000 across two different buy periods to put the fund closer to target allocation. Sorry, I probably just made that way more complicated. I wanted it on the record that I'm not the one actually moving the money.
Right. So, yeah. It's where we are going to direct that the money gets moved to.
Yeah.
Into the investment account. So let me try that again. I will move a motion that move $700,000 into the investment cash account, which we will then get recommendations from Ian of when to buy $350,000 into the investments to rebalance the investment account. Okay. Does that sound clear enough for everyone?
Yes.
Great. Yes. Great. So I moved it. Can I get a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. John Gangle. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, I'll go for a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those not in favor? The ayes have it, passes unanimously. So we have our marching orders there and look forward to getting that done. Anything else you'd like to discuss as the administrator?
No, I think that is it.
Great. Any other questions for Sarah? Seeing none, we'll move on to our new and unfinished business. Standing item, COLA updates. There is no update to the COLA. There has been no work done by the committee between this meeting and the last meeting. So that's where that stands. And I don't have any other thoughts that I haven't said before on it. So I'll leave it at that. And we'll move on to pension trustee training. We've had an incredible amount of trustee transition. Learned about one this morning. So I think it's time people know what they're doing here. And we need to get folks out to new trustee orientation and some trustees training to keep up on the latest changes, some a background on some of the topics we talk here so they can have some of their own knowledge when Ian's talking, when Scott's talking, when Sarah's talking, or Jeff's talking, that we want to make sure that we're comprehending and be able to articulate our questions and make solid choices. So I know at the last meeting we had discussed using probably district to book that travel for the trustee training. And now I think HR is humming along and we can maybe work with HR on getting who we need to get to the training, which is in October, late October, I think. Let me see here, I got it up. So it starts on the 22nd for new trustees and the conference ends on the 26th for those that are not new trustees. But I would recommend anybody that hasn't attended as a trustee, go to the new trustee orientation, which is the first 2 days. It's a Saturday and a Sunday. And then they can attend the rest of the conference after that, which starts Sunday evening and goes to Wednesday afternoon. And it is currently held in Las Vegas this year, which any conference we ever go to is always the cheapest one. So if we're gonna send a lot of folks and send them for a longer period of time than normal, we couldn't have ended on a better year here. This is great. So I think we need to move that going forward, and I'll work with HR to identify folks from the ATU side and kind of what they need. And then maybe Christina or Mark can work on Wayne Transit side and what they need. And we'll just discuss that. Sound good? All right.
And Bill, there we have I believe it's $1,000 credit that can be applied to the trainings through that IFEBP group. Yeah. So I think we can use those credits. We should use those credits first as we're booking things.
Yes, that should show up on the Wayne Transit account for IFEBP. And if we can get all of our ducks in a row, we can have everybody identified. Maybe we can just do one booking process that could be credited off of that. And then whatever else needs to be paid needs to be paid. Thank you for reminding us of that. I think that was from the cancellation due to COVID where folks weren't able to attend. All right, that's all that's on the agenda. If there's any other new business that folks would like to discuss, now's the time. Not seeing anybody. We'll move on to calendaring the next meeting. And we'll leave that for Ian to kind of determine when the good news can be delivered.
Usually, I think kind of fifth week or so for post. So like maybe sometime in the November 7th to 11th week could probably be the earliest.
That's a great week for me. So I'm not going to be the problem. So I'll let you.
I got nothing that week.
Great. John is available.
I couldn't hear what he said, Bill.
That's the week of November 7th through the 11th.
Week's open right now, so grab your slot.
All right. So we're doing really good. Mark, how you doing?
Good.
Okay. Christina?
8th looks best.
8th? Okay.
Yeah, I could do the 8th.
Perfect. How's that work for you all?
Good.
That works for me.
Great. Scott's in. Works. Ian, Jeff, Sarah. Okay. Let's put it down for the 8th of November at 11 a.m. for the start of the ATU LTD Pension Trust with the salary plan following after. And with that success, I'm going to bid you all adieu and adjourn the meeting of the ATU LTD Pension Trust and hand it over to Christina to take over for the salary plan.
Thank you, Bill.
Yeah. We're doing good. All right. Anyways,
great to see you again. Jumping all over my lap.
Hello, good to see you. Yeah, good to see you too late in the evening. Let me know if I get you too hard of a time.
No, you're the easiest.
You guys are awesome. See ya.
See you later, John.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I will start the pension trustee meeting for the salaried employees retirement plan. And let's take, I guess, a roll call. It's just Christina Hsu. I'm here. Mark Johnson.
I'm here.
And I think we've been informed that Michelle Weber is also being replaced from this meeting as well. Is that correct, Camille?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, awesome. Today we are just Mark and I. All right. So are there any changes to the agenda, Mark, that you have?
I have nothing.
Okay. And Camille, is there anybody in the audience that wants to participate or make a comment?
No.
Okay, excellent. And the next thing I guess we have is approval of the meeting minutes. Mark, do you have any changes?
Oh,
approval.
How's that?
Do the meeting minutes look okay to you, Mark?
They do.
All right. So I will move to approve the meeting minutes. Do you, I'm in favor.
I just did that.
Oh, we did? Okay. All right. I must have missed it. Sorry. So we updated the salaried employees retirement plan funding policy, similar to what we did with the ATU plan. And it's, the same reason and the purpose of the meeting is to have it be reviewed and approved the policy so that I can bring it to the board for adoption, either as presented or amended. And does anybody have any changes to the policy that was sent out, the updated policy for the salary plan?
It was much more straightforward than that.
All right. So do you approve Mark as, presented?
Yeah.
Okay. And I do as well. So I will bring that to the board at the next September board meeting for adoption. The next one is Ian. Do you have any changes that you want to talk about different from what you did related to the ATU plan with regards to investments? And I'll stop sharing so you can share.
I would say unless there's desired, the specific dollar amounts differ, but the comments are pretty similar. So
same state of affairs.
Yeah,
that's right.
I was gonna say unless there's a desire to talk specifics on dollar amounts, the percentage terms of everything are similar enough where I would say the comments are pretty applicable to this plan as well.
Excellent. And thanks for giving us such a comprehensive review of the ATU plan and the market conditions. So thank you.
Of course.
Next, we have a report of the actuary.
Thanks, Christina. I'll share another kind of similarly brief presentation here, if I can get that working. All right, do you see presentation title?
Yep, looks great.
Great, okay. So as we discussed for the ATU plan, similar sort of biannual cycle for the valuation work we do. It runs on a little different calendar since the valuation date is July 1 for the salaried plan, but still sets the contribution rate for a 2-year period. So for the current fiscal year that just started and the next one, those rates have already been determined. And we're now kind of halfway through the a little over halfway through the 2-year period. So when we come back around to July 1 of next year will be the measurement date that sets the, subsequent 2-year contribution calendar. Another project we have, and this we do every year and is coming up here shortly, is benefit statements for remaining active members to show their current accruals and what they have there. And then, as mentioned for the ATU plan, we do annual accounting disclosures, GASB disclosures that were just wrapped up here in the last week. But similar sort of 4-year look, but again, these are July 1 dates. Looking at the funded percentage of the salaried plan. And because of the July 1 date, it shows here, on the schedule, the move from 67% funded up to 80% July 1, 2021. And now the most recent kind of market update that coincided with our GASB work was back down to 69%. So it had in that 21 to 22 year, it had, some good months, late 21, and then some very poor months in the first 6 months of this year. And so funded status dropped 11% on a funded status basis. But the comments of the that I made in the ATU meeting apply here as well. Certainly that some of the rally in market since then would be helpful for these measures and that there is a little bit potential countervailing force depending on where we end up with the market on what that means for the discount rate. So trustees have been moving this discount rate down over the last few years from 5.5% to 5, reflecting, changes in capital market outlooks. There may be, no further downward pressure, or even there might be the possibility of increases, just depending on where things kind of go from here in the capital markets, PE ratios and interest rates and all those things that kind of affect the long-term look on expectations, even though, the short term is kind of unknowable in near-term returns. So I'll pause there. Any questions from the trustees or any additional information that would be helpful to cover at this point?
That was helpful. Thank you very much, Scott.
You're very welcome.
So returning back to the agenda, the next thing we have is the administrator's report. So Sarah.
Again, expenses, nothing really out of the ordinary except for the June bill.com snafu that salary needs to repay, but we will do that probably this month in payments. Everything else is pretty typical, and the retirees and beneficiaries, I should note that two of them are beneficiaries. Nothing else.
And Sarah, that amount that we're paying back is $9,000. Is that what it is? Is it?
Yeah, I mean, a little under. Yeah, okay. $87.99.79.
Okay. Yeah. And there's no rebalancing needed in this fund. Is that correct?
No, at this point, we're still on a cash flow negative, but we are, because of the last transfer that we made, we're on track to be okay until we'll just catch up again on the next meeting.
Sounds good. All right. Any other business that people want to comment on or bring up that we need to talk about that we haven't done so far? All right.
Question though, how many people are still paying into this into the admin, the salaried employees
plan?
Yeah,
that I don't really know. I don't have the active numbers.
We can get it.
Yeah.
So they closed in 2014.
Yeah, I think there are just a handful that I know of, but I can't give you an exact.
Yeah.
Was the question for the active headcount who are still participating in this plan?
Correct.
Okay. Give me a moment, and I can find that from our last valuation date. Okay, as of July 2021, there were 25 remaining actives.
25 active. Okay, right. Thanks.
Oh, you're very welcome.
All right. The last thing is that the future meeting is going to be on November 8th, following the ATU meeting, which starts at 11. And unless anybody has anything else, this meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, Christina.
Thanks, Christina.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
That was efficient.